All right, so just for the purposes of the recording, I will say that today is Tuesday, November 15th, and this is the 2 p.m. Eastern Time PSS group, and this week we are talking about shifting expectations, which is one of my very favorite things to talk about, because it makes such a big difference. But before we do that, we're going to go around and check in, and Sherry, when we check in, what we do is, if you're new, say where you're from, and then tell us a little bit about the child that brought you to us, and then we're going to celebrate. So say where you're from, the child that brought you to us, a little bit about that, and then something that you want to celebrate, something that's gone well or stands out in the past couple of weeks is something fabulous, and it can be just the fact that you made it to this call, or it can be something specific. So
okay.
Let's go ahead.
Okay, I'm Sherry, and I live in Midland, Texas, and my son, who brought me here, is a 10-year-old little boy named Luke. And my celebration is I got one teacher that he's been having some conflict with on board with reporting in to me on a weekly basis, just a quick email to check in that he's been being positive and that he's holding on to his questions. Our goal is to have him write them down and either wait until she's finished with the lesson or not ask at all if he finds that his answer was given while he waited to listen, and then he and I are going to also review his question list at night. So that's a real positive.
That's awesome. Good. It's always nice to have the teachers on board.
Yes.
And have them cooperate. That's great. Perfect. Catherine, do you want to check in?
After Tyler's conference, he's at now 11. His birthday was on the 8th. The teacher said that he's having trouble focusing and talking with others during class time, and so I emailed his neurologist, and she adjusted his meds, and now he's doing a lot better. So, yay!
Good. Yay! That's wonderful. Did you guys go down or switch meds entirely or up?
We went up.
Up.
So he's on the same drugs, but up the dosage.
Gotcha. And that made a huge difference, huh?
Yeah.
Cool. Marvelous. All right. Well, I am celebrating that we are back from the CHAD conference and that our new book, Parenting ADHD Now, completely sold out, which was fabulous, and that we're number one right now on the Children's Learning Disorders new releases list on Amazon, which is pretty darn cool since the book only officially came out today. There's links on our website if you guys are interested in getting your own copy. That's my celebration for the day. So, Sherry, what we typically do now is that
David already ordered it.
So. Oh, good. I ordered a copy, too. I just wanted to, have fun of having it come in the mail in a little box. I'm a dork, total dork, but I'm really excited. So what we typically do now is, if it's just like the three of us or kind of a small group, what we'll do is go through the lesson relatively quickly and then do some laser coaching if we have time for that. Or just have a really robust discussion about the topic, and then we'll do checkouts. And typically when it's a small group like this, just two of us, or three of us total, we don't use the whole hour, but we certainly can if we need to. And you'll find that the weeks kind of vary. Some weeks we'll have like 8 or 9 people on the call, and some weeks we'll just have 1 or 2. It all works the way it's supposed to. So we're talking about I completely forgot. Duh. We have to take aim first. Taking aim is a kind of a critical piece, too, because what it does is help us figure out exactly what we want to focus on for the purposes of the call. And we want to take aim on the change that we want to see. So, for example, if there's something that's been on your mind, if you had a fight with your child last night or this morning, or there's just something that's been bugging you, that might be a perfect thing to take aim on. Sometimes people take aim on like a huge issue, and I'll try to help you like boil it down. So if we're thinking about like the morning routine, for example, the morning routine is going to be too big. We want to really get down to something very specific that we can take aim on so that we can set ourselves up for success relatively quickly. And it doesn't have to be related to the topic for today. Like I said, it can be something that's just kind of bubbling up or whatever's top of mind that you kind of want to work through. So we leave it pretty wide open. It's okay to change your mind. It's okay, you know, when we get back together to have changed what you took aim on altogether. We're not going to hold you accountable for it unless you want us to. But we like to start there because it really helps us kind of focus our thoughts during the course of the conversation that's to follow. So, Catherine, is it okay if I ask you to go ahead and take aim first since you've done it before?
Sure. I have a couple of issues. Let me start with the main one, and that's we're still having a problem with the cussing. I don't think he thinks before he talks, but we've had conversations with him about, you know, you can't do that because, you know, one, it's rude, disrespectful, I think it's so ingrained in him now that he just spouts off.
It's an essential piece in that working memory.
I know. It just is bothering me, and I don't know what to do with it. I've told him that unless he, you know, stops with this language, he's, you know, probably gonna lose friends whose parents don't want them exposed to his language. And it's really hard.
Yeah.
Because I don't know really what to do with it. I think part of it, he's really into skateboard and scootering. And I have heard, I think it's picking up this from the skate parks.
Okay.
Because
so his friends maybe use the same language too. Or some of them maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, he's so into it. I don't want to take it away from him. But on the other hand, I don't want him to be exposed to all this foul language. Because this is something that he really wants to do.
Yeah.
Now,
remind me, last time we talked, sorry.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Last time we talked,
you guys were going to collect some data, as I recall, and then maybe also have a conversation with him about what was going on in his head.
Yeah.
Am I misremembering?
Yeah. And
how'd that go?
He didn't want to talk to us about things, and he will just say, "I don't know."
Okay.
I don't know.
Okay.
He means to, you know, he needs to talk to us more, but that's also a problem because he won't talk. He has an appointment with his therapist tomorrow, so maybe we'll talk to him. But
But in terms of putting together some kind of a chart or giving him some opportunities to to earn more skate time. That's still kind of in the works. Is that right?
Yes.
Cool.
It is.
Perfect. That's amazing how fast time flies.
Isn't
it? Oh, yeah. We're going to do that. Crazy. Totally cool. All right. So we're taking aim on the cussing still, or cursing, depending on how you want to say it. Totally understand.
Uh-huh.
Sherry, what would you like to take aim on?
I think my reaction to my son's outburst when he gets upset. And
all right, taking aim on you.
You know, yes, because, of course, I don't always do it, but when I do, I get so frustrated. A huge outburst last week when I got frustrated with him. And then we had one again about 4 or 5 days later where I kind of shamed him and I felt back. I didn't kind of, I did, because he wrote me a mean note. Mm-hmm. anyway, my reaction was not great. And not as bad as the one I had earlier in the week. So I just, you know, I need to work on that. And that's what I want to take aim on.
Okay, cool. Well, we can definitely work back into that, and I think that that's a common thing to take aim on. I think we find out kind of at the end of this process that most of what we've changed is ourselves and the way that we respond and approach our kids. And our topic a couple weeks ago was parenting effectively and how difficult and challenging it is to parent effectively when we're, you know, pissed off, for lack of a better word. So then it becomes about trigger management and all that stuff. But we'll talk about that in a little bit. Shifting expectations absolutely plays into that. Because, you know, one of the things that we want to do as parents is to set ourselves up for success and set our kids up for success. And it's so easy for us to compare our kids to their peers or our friends' kids and to should all over ourselves. You know, they should be able to do this. They should be able to stop this. I should be able to get them to do this. And that's just never effective. And all it does is beat us up and then make us feel bad. And then a lot of times we end up taking it out on our kids, even when we don't mean to. And so the challenge is to see our kids where they're at and to meet them where they're at instead of to drag them to where we want them to be.
Yeah.
Elaine always talks about visualizing, you know, like a staircase, and I think we've used it in this call before too. You know, and if we're at the top of the stairs and our kids are at the bottom of the stairs, we want to walk down the stairs. We don't want to reach down the stairs and drag them all the way up. We want to go down the stairs with them and help them get to the next step. And then, but the goal is for them to be able to climb the stairs by themselves, right? And so it's okay to shift our expectations, to meet them to where they are. You know, if they're not halfway up the stairs yet, then yelling at them from halfway up the stairs isn't going to make the change happen. And I know that you guys know that our kids, for the most part, are 3 to 5 years developmentally behind their peers in one area or another. 3 to 5 years, and that just blows my mind, because it's the, when I remember that, it is the piece that makes the most difference in my approach to my kids. And it's the one that I forget time and time again. But if I'm looking at my 12-year-old and he's just melting down or behaving in a way that is just not appropriate or, you know, very frustrating, and if I think back to, you know, what my kids needed when they were like 8 or 9 or even younger, that's where he's at. And as soon as I flip that switch in my head and try to see him from as a 9-year-old, or a 10-year-old, and after 5 o'clock in the evening, we always say take another year off. It's usually after like 7 in my house.
Yeah.
So, you know, but that's where our kids are, and then it makes so much sense. And, you know, I'm thankful that we have a surprise child, because he's a lot younger than the rest of my kids, and I can look at him and remember what that age is like. And, wow, it's a big difference from where we think they should be and where they actually are. And if I can approach him, you know, providing the supports and the structures that I'm given for my, you know, my 5-year-old or my 6-year-old, depending on the kid, you know, and the age or whatever, then things are going to go a lot better. And it shifts my perspective too. Lots of parents don't like the term disability perspective, and it doesn't bother me. You know, I'm confident and comfortable saying that I have a child with special needs. He has autism and ADHD, and I have two with just ADHD. And, but that helps too. You know, when I see that it's not a matter of won't do it, it's a matter of can't do it, not able to do it yet, that just changes the way I approach almost everything. So what's coming up for you guys as I'm talking about that?
Well, I
think let's see, who did I hear first? I think this was Catherine.
I don't know. You could go ahead.
I don't know. Is that you?
Catherine,
sorry.
Catherine, you're on.
Okay. The thing that I need to remember is specifically with math, he can only do like two steps at a time, and then he shuts down because he's in fifth grade. And they're learning division with three-digit by two-digit numbers, and that just pours in over the edge because he can remember two steps, but then he can't remember what to do. So
yeah,
I think that goes back to, you know, 8 years old.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he's not able to keep up. I mean, he says okay on his desk, which is a positive. But it's really hard for him to keep us. And then by the time he gets home and we're going to do his homework, the meds have worn off. And it's
very challenging.
Harder to get him to focus. I try. I used to teach fifth grade, but you know, as a parent who used to teach, I don't know anything. So
isn't that true?
Yeah. So I.
But you
I
recognize
try to
that,
help
so
him.
That's good.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was one thing that I try to remember all the time, but it doesn't necessarily work.
Gotcha. And remind me, does he have an IEP or a 504 plan in place with some accommodations?
He has an IEP. Yeah, IEP.
Okay. Okay. And is there anything specific in there about math?
When we met last year, I added a piece about math. The RSP teacher is primarily focusing on his writing and spelling because he just doesn't want to write. And so he has a project due tomorrow, and I've had her work with him on that. And I think she's spending like one day a week on math. But I think we're going to have to get a tutor or something for him.
Yeah. You can ask for other accommodations, either reduced homework or, you know, something at school.
Well, that's one of the things that we have in the IEP let him do what he can do in class and not necessarily set it all home because it's World War III.
Getting
to do it.
And I know this is me stepping out of my just coaching role and just going into the role of a parent who's been there. Just one thing that we tried, well, we did at my son's dose, but the other thing that we tried was if we could tell when he got home from school that enough had worn off that it really wasn't worth it to have the fight, we would wait until the morning and then have him do his homework on the way to school. And I'm sure you've tried that, but you know, the 2 hour knockdown drag out to get him to do five problems that he did in like 5 minutes in the morning on the way to school, it was a no brainer for us.
Yeah.
Because the meds had kicked in, right? And he could do it in the car and voila, no fight.
School is like 5 minutes from our house.
So there you go. That's not quite the same.
I mean,
you could drive around the block.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Just a thought, or maybe before you leave, if his meds are kicked in. Or, anyway, so that was me stepping out. Take that or leave it. Sherry, what are your thoughts?
Thank you.
Well, you know, I hear it a lot, but I think, gosh, I don't want to think of my 10-year-old as a 5-year-old or an 8-year-old, but that is probably very much how he reacts when, you know, specifically with him, it gets real emotional if he can't have something he wants. For example, if he can't spend the night with a friend, it doesn't matter that the friend is standing right there. He just gets to tears. You know.
Uh-huh.
And that's really just something I've seen more of over the past couple of years. And it, you know, I don't know if it's the hormones that have increased as he gets older and he's reacting that way. I don't know if it's a side effect of the medication that he's taking, but you know, it's better than being angry. I like that. I like seeing sadness instead of anger. That just makes me feel like he's feeling his feelings and it's good. But I mean, really just, you know, hyper focusing and getting sad. So I do need to think that way. That okay, he's acting like an 8-year-old, which of course my 8-year-old daughter doesn't act that way, but they're different children. she's more sad, more emote. And or you know, what would I do with a kindergartner if he's crying like that? And I don't even know what to do other than, you know, I'm like, say stop, you've got to chill out. So I see it. I definitely see it there. You know, he's a fifth grader and he's doing fifth grade work, but there are areas where he's not reacting, you know, like I would assume his peers aren't.
Right. No, and that's a key point, that it's in specific areas. It's not in all areas. It's usually just in one or two areas. And emotional immaturity and impulse control is usually the primary area. Not all the time, but for most kids with ADHD, that's the primary area where they're struggling. And they get stuck. You know, they don't have a tolerance for things not going the way they want, and they get tired of being wrong all the time, and then they begin to deflect and, you know, kind of shut down. And you've probably seen that. They don't know how to handle the emotional intensity. So they're either going to blow up or, you know, curse or shut down or escape, you know, escape into tears or video games or something else. And part of our challenge is to help them learn to manage that emotional intensity. And that's that perspective shift and that expectation shift. It's not lowering expectations. It's just setting realistic expectations and meeting them where they are. You know, our goal, again, is for our kids to become independent adults, not tall kids. In our success story, we want our independent adults to be able to manage their emotions and to set goals and achieve those goals. And so, you know, it's okay to say it's reasonable to get upset, you know, and to teach them that it's okay to get upset. I understand you're really frustrated. But then to also kind of walk them through the process of, you know, here's what I expect. Here's what I'm looking to achieve with this conversation. You know, here's the behavior that I think we need to see. Here's what's going to happen when we're talking about training or helping our kids step up to the next stair step. But that shifting of expectations and remembering that 3 to 5 year challenge or developmental delay in usually one or two areas is a really critical piece of that. Someone else just joined us. You want to check in real quick?
Hey, Kelly. This is Kelly Baldwin. I'm sorry. I had my boss and my company called it too, of course, so I couldn't be like, oh, I'm sorry.
Well, dang it. Doesn't they know that we have a call at 2?
I mean, come on.
Dude, seriously. All right, so we're talking about, you know, shifting expectations. And I don't know if you had a chance to read the workbook, but we're just talking about the things that come up with in terms of the 3 to 5 year developmental delay. If you real quickly just want to share with us again where you're from, Georgia, obviously.
I'm from Augusta, Georgia.
Mm-hmm. And then the name and age of the child that brought you to us?
Yeah, my child is Riggs. He is 5. And he was diagnosed with ADHD about 3 months ago. And he also has encopresis. I don't know if you all know what that is, but basically he has a withholding thing that when he with his feces and stuff. So he's getting better. Accidents have definitely, I mean, they're very few and far between now. But because of that, his pediatrician, the only reason he recommended medication was because he felt that he was afraid he would go back to that pattern because he was getting very frustrated at school because he was always in trouble and he couldn't sit still and he was by the teacher and all that stuff. So he's the only reason he recommended it. And so it took us about 3 months and things getting worse and worse. And we actually put him on it about 3 weeks ago, and it has been a huge improvement for his little life, for sure.
It's a lifesaver.
Yeah.
It is. Yeah.
I mean,
I
was
think
really
anyone...
like, ugh, but
wow.
I think it's for him, it's been the right decision. There was some struggle with me. Am I doing this just to get the A as the parent from the teacher? You know what I mean? And I don't mean she suggested medication.
Mm-hmm.
Is it because I want to see the greens come home and not the reds? You know, is it, how important is this to me? Or how much is he really getting frustrated? And it became clear that he was getting terribly frustrated. And so I think he's feeling much better about himself.
And that's the key piece, right? I mean,
that
emotional intensity, our kids often turn it on themselves, you know, and they hear, you know, you messed up again and you're a bad person instead of, you messed up again. So I think that's the key piece. And medication for everyone is a very personal choice. I happen to be very pro-medication, but I completely understand that there's plenty of people out there who it doesn't work for them, and that's totally fine.
My husband's 38, and he's been on that. He's as an adult. I mean, he's diagnosed at 16. He actually has not addiction, active addiction issues anymore, but he had them in his past, and he always kidded around that it was the only pill he hated. He liked every other pill in his life he ever took. He hated that stuff. But as an adult and a non-addict, he has started to take Vyvanse about 2 years ago, and it's helped him tremendously, too.
Good, yeah.
Managing
his
life. I
take Vyvanse also. Yeah, I'm an adult with ADHD also, and that's a very common story, you know, we find particularly in people who weren't diagnosed as kids, that they are self-medicating or trying to find some way to self-medicate and then eventually cross that line into alcoholism and addiction.
But
good for your husband.
And that's one of the ways that I think I was able to convince Charlie, because he was worried, because he was like, he's 5, it's a Schedule 1 drug. And then I kind of presented all the evidence that showed that we may not be able to prevent him from being an addict one day, but most people who are true addicts do not abuse their ADD medication when they're truly ADHD.
Correct.
And then he could see some of the things that Riggs was going through at school, not being able to sit still, kind of being off in La La Land when he had no interest, having a lot of time, hard times of transitions from one thing to another, especially if he really liked what he was doing. He'd finish his work early, and he was correct. And most of the schoolwork is not that bad at this point, but he's in kindergarten. But he had a lot of problems, wanting to do the next thing, And and he started just to feel like I said, he would say, I can't do anything right. And you don't want to hear a kindergartner who's 10 weeks into school, I don't really like school anymore, I think my husband could see that. Like, he's like, I remember this feeling.
Sure.
Like, I just couldn't do anything right. And so,
And I think as parents, too, we have a tendency to take that and catastrophize a little bit. You know, that again goes back to kind of the shifting expectations and that 3 to 5 year developmental delay that, you know, there's going to be all kinds of failures along the way. There just are. And it's not because our kids won't do it. It's again, because they can't. And as parents, it's important that we don't take, he's failing first grade math, and extrapolate that to he's going to be living in my basement forever.
Right.
Because we're not currently able to do that, the ADHD brain does continue to grow and develop, and there is a lot of research that shows that the brains catch up. And it's usually in the late 20s. There's some research that shows right around 25 to 28, but I've seen research that goes as high as 28 to 32. So our kids are going to catch up with their peers. Sorry?
I have a friend that's an adult that's 48, and I still don't know if his brain caught up. He's on medication. He still struggles. with lots of stuff.
Yeah.
But.
Well, and there's plenty of people who, I mean, just because your brain is, you know, caught up developmentally doesn't mean that the ADHD goes away necessarily.
Yeah.
It just means that your brain is caught up with your peers. And for some, that's a huge help. But mm-hmm. One of the things that was a clear takeaway from the CHAD conference this past weekend that Elaine and Diane and I went to was that, you know, for the majority of people, the symptoms do continue into adulthood. And there's a whole host of people now who did not have ADHD as kids who are developing it as adults. And tons of research to support that, which is fascinating stuff. But anyway, there is hope. There's always hope. So the developing brain does catch up with your peers, but you may still have some of the challenges. And that's why what we do right now is so important, you know, putting those systems and structures and scaffolding and railings in place to help our kids up those staircases so they can get to the top.
Mm-hmm.
So what's coming up, guys? Any thoughts or things to add? Nothing specific? Should we do some laser coaching? We've got time for a little bit of laser coaching, or we can, work through the 3 to 5 year challenge. All right, we're going to go 3 to 5 year challenge. So it's on page 29 of the workbook. If you have it in front of you, great. If not, I will read the questions to you. And you can just think about it and jot it down, and then we can talk about it if you guys want to. So what we're going to do is identify one challenge that drives you crazy, you know, like staying in the room or not turning in homework or cursing. And then anytime you hear that you hear yourself in your head say, you know, why can't he just do this? Or why can't he just stop this? So that's the first one. Write down one challenge or think of a challenge that's kind of driving you crazy. The second piece is, you know, what are your expectations for what you'd like your child to be able to do? You expect them to come home and get their homework done, or expect them to hang up the towel after the shower, or you expect them to not leave his shoes by the front door, you know, things like that. And then if you think back to what we've been talking about so far this hour, you know, what are some ways you can shift that expectation? Anybody want to volunteer to go first?
I'm still thinking.
Think away. I'll read them again. So the first question was pretty straightforward. You know, what's just one challenge that drives you story crazy? Like, my 10-year-old leaves his stuff everywhere. I think I would go with, why can't he just throw the trash away when you're done? Pick it up, throw it away. Throw the soda can away. Throw the wrapper away.
My expectation is that I would.
Yeah.
Shoes and clothes. Mm-hmm. He just takes shoes off and leaves them everywhere.
Yep, and they're like snakes. They just kind of shed everything as they come in the door.
And he can't put his clothes in the basket.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why? I've given up on him cleaning his room. Because he has, like, so many Legos.
Mm-hmm.
I just have to shut the door.
Yeah. And I think that's a good point. Sometimes we can readjust our expectations entirely to the extent that we just kind of take it off the table for now. Because we know it's not realistic that it's going to happen. Or there are other things that are higher priority.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's great. And so is there a piece of that we can shift expectations on that you haven't already?
I just have to remind him, especially because his shoes, he just leaves them all over the house. And... he doesn't like to wear socks. So his shoes are just skanky. I've had to take to for Breeze to make them less stinky.
Gotcha.
So morning he actually wore socks. Woohoo!
cool.
He generally takes off his clothes in his room, so occasionally he'll leave stuff on the shirts out in the living room. But we have a basket right by the door for shoes. Put him.
And he does not put his shoes in the basket. Okay.
David has taken to hiding his shoes. Like he'll put one somewhere and then the other somewhere else. So he
How's that working?
Doesn't go looking for them.
Oh no. Is that going well?
He has a pair of Crocs that one is sitting near the living room, and David put the other one somewhere, and I can't remember where, but he hasn't found it.
Oh, that's funny. That's what I would do. Hide it somewhere so I wouldn't forget. So just for the purposes of this exercise, it's reasonable to say that your son can't, on his own, remember to put the shoes in the basket.
Yeah.
Is that accurate? Okay. And so if you stand there and tell him to do it, will he do it?
You have to tell him, like, once or twice, depending on what he's doing at the time. And he'll do it, you know, you have to tell him, and then you have to wait a while so he can do it. But constant reminders don't work.
Okay. So just one reminder and giving him the space and the time to actually complete the task, that works?
Yeah.
Okay.
Normally,
okay. So that's the expectation. That's the realistic expectation for him right now. Because the ADHD brain doesn't have an internal clock. You know, we have the now and the not now. And so we always need, a lot of time we need external reminders, you know, post-it notes or a body double or someone who's standing right there to say, hey, put those shoes in the basket since we're right here. Let's get that done. And it's going to be that way for a while. You know, we joke that probably the worst thing a kid with ADHD can do is do something right once, because then we're going to expect them to be able to do it all the time. and our kids have challenges with working memory, you know, and you may be able to climb up the stairs once, but it may be a fluke. And it doesn't necessarily mean that skill is a skill that's stuck. So knowing that he needs the reminder to get it done, does that shift your expectations for success in any way?
For things like that, the clothes and shoes and making sure he's feeding the dog and feeding his turtles and his lizard and his fish, the cats eat upstairs when we have to lock them in the room upstairs because it's a long story. But we have to remind him to do that. It's getting better because we've added in, for a long time, it's just feed the dog. And then we've expanded that to making sure you are feeding your turtles and the fish.
And so that's a lot.
Yeah. And that happens in the morning. And then our dog gets fed in the evening, too. So
mm-hmm.
he's pretty good about doing that. Occasionally, okay. I have to remind him, and then he'll get around to doing it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So he does it if you remind him, usually.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, we have turtles because he found them. We have a lake at the end of our street, and he mm-hmm. found, they're tiny. He mm-hmm. found them and brought them home, and we had an extra tank from the lizard that he found in the front yard. So we got the lizard.
What a sweetheart.
He loves
Noah's Ark going on there.
Yeah.
Oh, what a gift.
Last night we had to go to PetSmart, and he wanted another cat, a hamster, birds. I'm like,
and oh my gosh, wow.
Like, well, that could be your
That's
birthday
great.
Present. I'm like, no, we have enough pets right now.
But that's great that he's got so many interests. He's got skating and or skateboarding and you know, scootering, like you said, and all the animals. I think that's awesome. I think that's awesome. So progress is the goal, right? And we want to keep them moving in the direction of greater independence. And you know, for some kids, we're going to have to lower the bar more than we want to or think we should. There's that word. Because we want them to be successful. And, I mean, try to imagine what it feels like to fail constantly and to be letting people down or think that you're letting people down all the time. It's crushing. It's crushing. And so we want our kids to know that we're on their team, you know, that we're not another person that they're letting down all the time and that we're there to support them and help them be successful and that we know they can do it. Sherry, what's coming up for you?
Well,
you want to read the answers
I'm so happy
me?
To be here. No, I'm just I'm hearing so many things that I can identify with. Being married to an addict in recovery for a while who probably was ADHD and also having a kid who just leaves his stuff everywhere. But that's not what bothers like that. I'm like, yeah, that bothers me. It does. But nothing bothers me more than him not doing what I ask when I ask. And so I have to
at the
balance
moment.
And think. Like, are you being an authoritarian, which is what I always accuse my husband of, that I'm more relaxed, but she says, you know, I let him get away with anything. And then I feel like when I get that way, whether it's, you know, it almost always has to do with being on the iPad or on the Xbox. Definitely wrap it up. And, you know, we have one friend who comes over, and if I say, hey, it's just 6:30, time to go home, well, boom, he walks out. Like my husband.
And is he a neurotypical child?
That. Yes, he's a neurotypical child. But I can't
well,
compare anything. And he's 2 years younger, but still, you know, just 5 more minutes, Mom. I've got to finish this game. You know, if I don't put everything up, all these other stupid things that probably make sense, but not to me because, and I have to balance that like, with, okay, and I haven't been doing it, but maybe giving him 5 minutes or, but that's it. That's mine. It just having to ask to do something more than once. And then I go into threat.
Mm-hmm.
I'm never giving you this again.
So it's based on what you're saying, it may not be a realistic expectation for him to be able to transition at the moment that you want him to transition. Is that accurate?
I think that's accurate.
Okay. And so what are some things that you can do differently or what are things that you do in your life when you have to stop working on something or stop watching a TV show or, you know, whatever, reading a book?
I can't say I'm good at it. So.
Okay.
So
well, let's go with that, though. How does that help? How does that help you better understand what's going on in his mind?
That's a good point, because if I'm in the middle of a good book or a good Netflix episode, I don't want to quit. I want to finish it or finish a chapter.
So is it reasonable for him to ask for 5 more minutes?
Probably, if he really wraps it up, and usually he does, you know, just
okay.
Finishing the game. And sometimes I'm cool with it, and sometimes, you know, I'm not. But it does frustrate me.
Mm-hmm. Is it the inability to kind of wrap it up when you need him to, or is it just the fact that he's on the iPad when he should be doing, you know, out playing or doing something that's not computer stuff?
No, I think it's more the inability because he'll,
okay.
You know, they do a lot of different things. So it's not just being addicted to that.
Vegetating. Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
Sometimes that's a challenge too. Okay, good.
That's helpful for me to think of how hard it is for me to transition.
Okay, cool. Good. Kelly, you want to chime in? We're talking about, I'll read the questions again.
One of the things I've noticed lately, and I used to kind of be that he didn't do what I asked. I kind of was thinking that, but it's actually that I'm sort of afraid of for him. He will not try anything new.
Mm.
Anything that like, and he's a very active kid, so you would think he would like,
mm-hmm.
you know, not that I necessarily want to be like a risk taker in the way my husband was in his youth, but. You know, I mean, we're at the zoo and you can feed giraffes. Here's your $2 lettuce, go feed the giraffe. And absolutely paralyzed. Or, you know, you can climb up and get on a big trampoline or, you know, he doesn't want to try any sports. He's afraid he's going to hurt himself. In general for life, that worries me for him, you know. There's some things that, you know, I mean, my husband was at Halloween. We were somewhere at a school where they had a haunted house, and I knew it was not going to go well. And he sort of insisted he go. And then the minute, and it wasn't that bad. It was not that bad of a haunted house, but there was a chainsaw. And as soon as he heard that, he flipped, and I just got him out of there. And, you know, he started trying new things. And I'm like, that's different, though. Like, I would have been terrified at 5 years old of a chainsaw like that. I don't like haunted houses in a 42. So, whatever. I don't like people jumping out of me. But, like, those kind of things I don't have, like, or not making him go on a roller coaster. Like, those kind of things I don't think I would make him do. But it's, there's a fear
like
of.
It's regular
like
stuff.
I said, regular mm-hmm. stuff that most kids at 5, I think, would kind of like to try. And he doesn't. And I don't know how to change that for him. Part of it is, I'm sure, just
his
personality. I don't know if there's an ADHD factor to that, that he's just in his little routine. He would rather watch Ninjago and read books, and that's just all he really wants to do, and just whatever, you know. He doesn't want to go outside. I mean, he will if you actually make him. But you have to make that kid go outside. And every day we're like, you have to go outside. 30 minutes, got to go. And he complains, and he doesn't want to do it. And
Then when he gets outside, is he okay?
He's okay, but a lot of times he'll just sit there.
Okay.
He doesn't want to ride a bike, anything like that.
Hmm. Okay. So what, let's think about this then.
And it's because he's afraid he's going to get hurt. That's the whole bike thing. The minute he falls down or something like that, you're done.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
He's.
So it's all around getting hurt. Something bad might happen.
Life, you know. Learning to ride a bike is a metaphor for life in general.
What if riding a bike to him is the same as having someone jump out of it with a chainsaw?
Yeah.
What if those two
yeah.
things are on the same level for him?
Mm-hmm.
Is that possible?
Yeah, it could be. Sure.
Okay. How does that change your approach?
I don't get onto him or anything. I'm just kind of like, I don't understand why you won't do this. This is fun. You know,
mm-hmm.
this is a
mm-hmm.
good time. It's something we could all do together and enjoy our time together. And so I don't mean that he's made fun of or that anybody gets mad at him or anything like that. But,
Right. I'm just trying to think of another way to look at it to help you adjust the expectation a little bit.
And so do you just not make him try new things? I mean,
I don't think so. No, I think it's there's either something else going on in that. So I would say kind of just, we say, you know, stay curious about it.
Stay curious,
if,
yeah.
You know, if, Yeah, I mean, just see, is there something else that's going on here that we're missing, you know, or is there something mm-hmm. else that could also be, you know, true? I mean, yeah, it could be that he's just very safe in his routine and he likes his routine and he doesn't want it to change. It could be that there's a little bit of spectrum stuff going on for him.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying there is. I'm not.
Yeah, no. I mean, there's definitely some sensory stuff that he, you know, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, he's definitely got the sensory thing where there's things he doesn't like on his body or, you know, some food issues and stuff, what he'll eat. It wouldn't shock me or anything like that. I mean, he would like to be a baby. Like, whoever gets him, I'm going to be like, I tried to make him self-sufficient. I'm sorry. But he wants a mama. I mean, he wants a mama.
He
would like a crib. If I would let him go back in his crib, he would.
Uh-huh. He likes the safety of it. But that's so if we do the 3 to 5 year developmental delay, that makes sense.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's
it takes
normal.
Him back to
the
toddler stage, right?
Mm-hmm.
And think
mm-hmm.
how, you know, that there's that fear. Everything is new. Everything feels new. And if
mm-hmm.
you're scared or something's happened that has taught you that sometimes new things aren't that fun, then everything feels scary.
Mm-hmm. Is it
and
odd that he would watch any of that? If I didn't monitor his TV, that kid would watch things that are way inappropriate as far as violence goes for his age group. I mean, I have to really be on top of, like, when he's at his grandparents' house, who don't care anything. I mean, I have to be like, you cannot let him watch something because it's animated. You cannot do that.
Does he seek it out, or does he just come across it?
I mean, he has interest in those sorts of visual things, but would never try any of that sort of danger kind
I mean,
of stuff.
My guess
himself.
Is that he enjoys the visual piece and the artistic piece of it, and that he doesn't understand the rest of it.
Okay.
That would be my guess. But I guess
mm-hmm.
it depends on if he seeks out specific types of shows. Have you asked him what he likes about those shows?
I think he likes the pace of them. He likes that they're fast, as opposed to like Curious George, who's not fast.
Not very fast,
mm-hmm.
right. Okay. So maybe it's just about finding a, you know, an age-appropriate show that moves quickly and is visually
mm-hmm.
stimulating.
But things
question.
Like
yeah,
riding a bike or, you know, like I
mm-hmm.
said, just things that you just kind of let them go for now.
You know, I think you take it slowly.
That may be as scary.
I think. Yeah, I mean, I think that you honor what's going on for him and you recognize that it may take him, you know, a lot longer than you would like to try new things and be ready to experience new things. But I think you keep, you know, you figure out where his comfort level is and make sure there's not something else going on. And then
mm-hmm.
you just continue to you know, provide the scaffolding for him because
mm-hmm.
there's no reason why he has to ride a bike at the age of 5. I mean,
no,
lots of kids do,
no.
but lots of kids
yeah.
don't until they're 10, you know,
and
there's just some of that's about how we as parents approach it. And some of that's just the kids, you know, sometimes their motor skills are enough behind that they're not able to ride a bike at 5 or 6,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
you know, and then we see a lot, you know, even with our teenagers now, when they can get their driver's license, you know, you'd think they'd be like jumping all over to get their driver's license
mm-hmm.
and get out the door. But because everything is so immediate, they don't need to actually go see their friends. They can,
you see
more and more teenagers dragging their feet on getting their driver's licenses, which for our kids is a good thing.
My cousin, her son is just turned 17, and he has no
mm-hmm.
interest in getting his driver's license.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because, you know.
And that's very common these days, which is fascinating
to
me.
Yeah.
Yeah. But there is a ton of research with our kids who have ADHD.
Yeah.
We don't want them driving young because they're about 5 times as likely to get in an accident. Right, you're right. And it's so true. My daughter has just turned 16, and in the space of a month, she's already gotten 1 speeding ticket and had a fender bender. And she's my ADHD child. And that was a... So it was in the afternoon after school, and so we're increasing her daily medication
for
focus on the drive home.
I used to work for State Farm, though, and I will tell you that most teenagers, from their research at State Farm, most teenagers get
mm-hmm.
into some sort of, typically it is minor, wreck before 17, and that normally is the
mm-hmm.
last one they have for 5 to 10 years. When they get in the wreck in the first year, it is such a, you know, hard experience for them, a scary experience for them. they tend to be very careful drivers after that. That's just a research State Farm did, FYI.
I love that.
I didn't know
ADHD Thank you.
Kids. That was just, you know, research.
I'm going to cling to that. All right, so we've only got a few minutes left. So what we're going to do now is do our checkout. And if you guys want to do the rest of the exercise at home, that's great. But for the purposes of our call today, I would like to go ahead and do the formal checkout. And so the questions are the same. Shelley, just so you know, Sherry, sorry, for every call, we ask the same four questions at the end. And hang on a second, let me pull them up. The questions are, what did I focus on or pay most attention to today? What's my clarity or my aha or my takeaway from today? What's a realistic action step for me to take, and how can I set myself up for success with this action? And I know we've kind of touched on pieces of all four questions as we were working through the 3 to 5 year developmental delay and challenge and shifting expectations. So if you just want to highlight those or bottom line them really quickly, that's fine. Let me read the questions again, and then whoever's ready can chime in and check out. So the questions again are, what did I focus on or pay most attention to today? What's my clarity or my takeaway from today? What's a realistic action step for me to take? And how can I set myself up for success with this action? Who's ready to go?
But this is Sherry. I'll go ahead and go.
Cool.
My first, what did I focus on? It would be in believing that the 3 to 5 year developmental lag really does exist, even if it's one area, mm-hmm. and for ours, it's emotional.
Yeah.
My clarity, a takeaway, is that when my son breaks down in tears for those situations, that this helps me. This is a good explanation for this, to look at him as a five-year-old and handle it as if he were five or seven. And I can set myself up for success. First, I'm going to just try to pause before I react. And then remember the lag. And I'm going to look up online, if I forget, how I would handle it with a five-year-old.
Oh, I like that.
Frustration with five-year-olds.
That's a great way to set yourself up for success. Yeah, absolutely. Cool. Thank you. Will you share kind of how things go in the forum if you get a chance? Our
I'll
Facebook
do it.
Group? Cool.
I will
thank
do it.
Thank you. I'm glad you're here today. Perfect. Marvelous. Who wants to go next?
I'll go. What Sherry was saying, the 3 to 5 year gap.
Yeah.
And just, you know, remember that he can't necessarily do what we want him to do because he can't. Be in touch with his teacher too, so we can see what he's doing. I think that would help us. And inform her that there's this gap, I don't know if she knows this or not, but she has to be more, conscious of him and that he can't do some things. Just the dialogue with her.
And do you have what you need to be successful with that in terms of setting up an appointment with her or just having a conversation with her?
Yeah, I really need to do that. And so after Thanksgiving, I want to set a meeting with her.
Perfect.
So
awesome. Thank you. Well, what's next?
This is Kelly. I guess I would say that my aha moment was when you said how hard it would be to be that person who always feels like they're letting someone down and how crushing that would be.
Yeah.
And so not only the, you know, not trying new things, but the things like leaving your shoes out and things like that. Not that I don't need to say, you know, hey, you need to put your shoes away. But, you know, maybe if it's the 10th day in a row he hasn't done it, not to get so frustrated remembering that he does have the working memory. And he may do it every 11th day, but don't get so frustrated that, you know, you've asked him and asked him and asked him and he still doesn't. And he probably does feel like sometimes like he can't do anything right. And that would be a really, really horrible way to feel.
Yeah. Yeah. So what do you need to, what's your realistic action step?
I think to take a pause.
Okay.
Sometimes I'd be even go in the other room for a minute.
okay.
Maybe get on my laptop where I have all of your documents saved for your classes.
Yeah.
And go read them.
cool.
probably would be helpful. You know, just to, I think it is hard. I mean, I think it's hard even with my 8-year-old who doesn't have these issues sometimes to remember that she is only 8.
Yeah.
And she's not
13. It is hard.
Yeah. And I think I struggle too with, she is okay. I mean, she's kind of one of those type A kids. Very rarely do you really have to get on to her for stuff. And so when she doesn't put her shoes away, you know, I tend to not really say as much because she does it every day except for the 11th day, you know. And so how to be consistent with both when she doesn't, she doesn't struggle there. She doesn't struggle with those things. She struggles with other things. That's not a struggle. And so I think that's hard for me too, is how much do I let it go? And how much do I not?
Well, I mean, it's just.
But I think taking a pause would be just big, you know. And again,
what do you need to do to remind yourself in the moment to take that pause? What you know, when you're getting worked up, how are you going to remember to say, okay, I got to step out?
That's a great question.
Sometimes it's just about recognizing in your body, you know, knowing kind of the signals. When you're getting
it's definitely in my chest. I can definitely feel it in my chest when I get.
Oh, perfect.
I mean, it's like right below my throat. Like I know that feeling. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good trigger for me that I need to probably take a pause.
Okay. Perfect. Good. 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 And so that seems like something realistic, in terms of an action step that you'll be able to do. Perfect. Good. The other thing I want to say before we sign off is that we are all human, and part of this parenting thing is forgiving ourselves. Because I know that we've all done, I know I have, maybe you guys haven't, but I have done and said things to my kids I really wish I hadn't. And I'm sure, you know, maybe some of you guys have too. But the important thing is that we come back and we apologize and we move on. We're only human and we're doing the best job we can with the information we have at the time. And I know you guys are all great parents because you're on this call and you're in this program. The good parents are the ones who are seeking out ways to be better parents, so that they can meet their kids where they are and help them to be successful. So forgive yourself, move on, because you're doing all the right things. And we're going to fall along the way, but we got to get back up, and we're going to be successful in the long run. So have a great Thanksgiving, you guys, because we'll talk, I think,
the week after
Thanksgiving. Yeah. Yeah, have fun. Eat lots of pie and put stuff in the forum if you come up with anything fabulous or if you just want to share a success story. We love hearing those. But thanks for being here today, guys. Take care.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jeremy.
Bye-bye.
Bye.